Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Go ahead.
Recent trip you just went on?
Yes, I went to Valley of Fire, Nevada, which is fun. It's like between St. George, Utah, and Las Vegas, so it's about 5.5-6 hours from here. Really pretty. Definitely recommend it. Beautiful state park. Freaking hot, even though it was probably high of like 70s. Almost got lost in the desert. Almost didn't have any more podcast episodes, so that would have been fun. And now I'm back, and I am watching a beagle named Phil, and he is glaring at me from on the bed. Phil. I don't know if it's short for Philbert or Philip or Phil the future. I have
that
no
is
clue.
Not
but
a
he
dog's
is glaring
name,
at
in
me.
My opinion, but
I love when dogs have either food names or like people names. So I think I told you like one time I had like a couple. So I work for Rover sometimes, and some of the dog requests I had was like tuna and biscuit and cheese or like something. It looked like a grocery list. I was like, these aren't even dogs. This is my grocery list. Or I like when they have like human names. Like Phil's kind of funny. It doesn't really roll off the tongue like Molly or Harley or I don't know any of the Lee names, I guess. Danny.
Yeah.
But like even like place names, like Phoenix is a cool name for an animal.
Hey, Phil.
Denver's a cool name. Phil. Oh, maybe it's for Philadelphia.
That's definitely not any better.
I don't know. He's cute. He's super fun on walks. He's just like so energetic. But as soon as he gets inside, he is the weirdest, judgiest dog I've ever watched. He doesn't want to be pet. He doesn't want to be alone. He wants your food, but don't look at him and don't touch him. But give him your food. But then like, don't leave him by himself. But also, don't breathe wrong. I breathe wrong.
Like a weird
and he's like,
cat
he left. Yeah, I guess he is a little more cat when he's inside. But yeah, he didn't want to go sit out with Chris in the living room, so he's judging me from the bed. How are you?
Nice.
What are your life updates?
Nothing much. Just hanging out, doing the thing.
Nice.
Listening to stories about Phil and Fire, you know? Sounds like a good time over there. But no, nothing new to report. We're probably going to get some rain and snow this weekend. Snow in the mountains,
ooh,
rain down in the valley. And I'm pretty tickled about it. Hopefully we'll go find some snow this weekend. We'll see.
That's exciting.
Getting pretty fired up for it. But on those very dull life updates, hello!
Ahoy! Wow,
and
thanks.
No, not you. Me. Welcome to the Underlakes Podcast, a show about all things Phil, fire, and shipwrecks on the Great Lakes. My name is Andrew. I'll be your captain for today.
And I'm Michelle. Yeah, welcome aboard this week's episode. I'm just so taken aback. I thought you called my things boring. We were talking about your things. Your things aren't boring. It's fine. Yeah.
We
can't all be adventurous all the time.
3 times this week. It was great.
Okay.
All
that's not something
early
to snip
morning
at.
Rides, like, basically, like, I had a headlamp just in case it was too dark. Like,
jeez.
Super early rides, and it was fun. I am very tired, but I mean, it's the best thing to be tired from. So it's been a
that's
busy
fair.
But good week. So
that's fair. Sounds
there's
like fun,
that.
Though.
Well, we're
being
starting,
safe.
You know, doing what we can. I wear a helmet. You gotta have something to put the brain in as a bucket.
Oh gosh, Andrew has this fun little habit he picked up in college. Where he'll call me every time he's doing something stupid and dangerous. Maybe not exactly stupid, but life threatening and dangerous. I guess that could be stupid. So he'll just be on the phone. He's like, in case I die, I want someone to be there. And I'm a little honored that you picked me, but also how traumatic would that be
just so
for
you know,
me?
I'm doing this, there's a high
selfishly.
Chance of failure. And yeah.
Yeah, it's like, couple times of that. It's either hey, I'm gonna go meet up with someone from Facebook Marketplace. I might die. Catch you later. Or like, I'm doing something that might actively, you know, off me. I'll talk to you to the end. And part of me thinks it's sweet, and part of me thinks it's
deranged.
You're gonna have to put in your will my therapy bill. So just look forward to that.
I can't wait. Well, we're starting off this month strong with hearkening back to a past trivia question. If you tuned in a few episodes ago, you'll already know a bit and be a tad bit familiar, more familiar with this story. We're going in loops here. We're talking about the SS Kamloops. The shipwreck is wild. What?
Widely mentioned.
No, sorry. I thought you made a sound. I wasn't sure.
Oh, about that. I said woo because you said loops and you said Kamloops, and I was like, I see what you did there.
Yep,
I approve.
It was 115% intentional too. This shipwreck is widely mentioned by TikTokers, influencers, TikTakers, podcasters, videos, and things of that like, because one of the sailors is still on board and can be seen by divers today. Not only that, he likes to follow said divers around, supposedly. Now, whether you believe it's for paranormal reasons or due to random lake currents, we'll leave that up to your discretion. But the ship and the sailor is absolutely real, so we'll get into that. And heads up, as you can probably tell, this isn't exactly a feel-good, happy-go-lucky kind of story. We're going to try and keep the mood a bit lighter in the beginning, where we can, and we'll end on a higher note. But heads up for the middle part that gets a bit dark. That being said, let's dive right in.
Yeah, what a way to start off November. I was thinking this would still come out in October, because we're filming this in October. Nope, I think it comes out in November. So we're just extending this spooky month. Sorry, guys.
Yay. Well, the SS Kamloops was a Canadian lake freighter that was completed in 1924. This steel-hulled package freighter was built by the Furness, F-U-R-N-E-S-S, not like the little box in your garage that keeps your house warm, Furness Shipbuilding Company Limited, located all of the way over in Stockton-on-Trays, Durham.
Is that how that's Montes. Pronounced? Oh, I was like, what do you know that I don't know?
Hold on. Okay. Located all of the way over in Stockton-on-Tees, Durham, England, United Kingdom. She was built to be a canaler freighter for work on the Great Lakes. Interesting choice to build it over in Europe and ship it over, but I mean, it works. The Kamloops was only 250 feet long, which is 76.2 meters, 43 feet wide, 13.1 meters, and 24 feet long, or 7.3 meters. Her gross register tonnage was 2,402 tons, and her net was 1,748 tons. She was considered relatively small for the Great Lakes in the 1920s, but again, she was a canaler. Along with having two rigged masts for backup propulsion, should all other things fail, the Kamloops was powered with a 1,000 horsepower triple expansion steam engine with Scotch boilers. You can see underwater photos of said Scotch boilers, best known for their use on steam ships. Makes sense with them being boilers.
I thought you said steamed ships, like steamed broccoli. Oh, this ship is just steamed.
I don't really like it being roasted or anything. I prefer it steamed, my ships.
You don't want a broiled ship. You want a steamed ship.
You want it steamed. Two episodes ago where we talked about the Manola and the Maple Dawn. Once she was finished with construction and being built, the Kamloops completed her sea testing on July 5, 1924, right before being shipped to Copenhagen, Denmark. Here, she picked up some freight and made her way across the pond to Montreal and on to Houghton, Michigan, United States. As a canaler, and one that did not need to be shortened or have her corners cut off or be re-lengthened, the Kamloops carried what was called, quote, diversified package freight, end quote, between Canadian ports.
How elusive. Not just like, various cargoes, diversified package freights.
Mm-hmm. Very.
When you're trying to up your proper word count.
Yes. But her main duties throughout her career was to carry manufactured goods from Montreal, Quebec, up the lakes to Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Quite the trip, going from beyond one end of the Great Lakes all the way to the other. During this time, Canada was still a part of the British Empire. Today, Canada is not part of the British Empire, as it has been a fully independent country since 1982, but it still has a constitutional monarchy with King Charles III head of state. This is purely for symbolism only, and he/the monarchy has no decision-making power in Canada. But we're talking about the 1920s. Canada is still under the UK Parliament rule at that time, and the Western Prairie provinces, namely Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, were economically growing fast. Due to this, these provinces bought a significant quantity of their manufactured goods from England. That answers that. Canada's freshwater fleet, including the Kamloops, became quite the indispensable link in this commerce chain.
Probably why she was built in the UK.
That's why I said that answers that.
I mean, it's pretty far though, so you weren't not onto something.
But it makes sense they filled her up with loot, if you will, for her trip over, headed westward.
Loot.
You know, it's what would that be? New Ship Express shipping or something like that.
Also, is it really loot if you purchase it? Like, that's not fun anymore.
I mean, every time I go to the grocery store, I bring home a bunch of loot, even though I paid for it. It really helps make the day a little bit brighter in these dark times.
You're not traumatized.
Like Great Lakes ships before and after her, the Kamloops was subject to moving as much freight as possible before winter weather hit, and with it, the storms and the ice. The Kamloops owners were no different and ran her as late into the season as possible. In fact, in 1924, she was one of the last vessels to pass through the Sault Ste. Marie Canal between Lakes Huron and Superior. And then in 1926, she ended her season stuck in the ice in the St. Mary's River on the Huron side of Sault Ste. Marie. I'd say they got a little bit excited with that one.
They were like, oh, we're going like to the last like run we can.
If we throttle these triple expansion steam engines all the way up, can we become a bigger boat with the ice that we're stuck in and still get to our destination?
Nah, just put that thought on ice. No? Okay, cool. Wow, thanks.
In 1926, not sure if it was before or after she got stuck in the ice, I'm assuming before, the Kamloops was purchased by new owners. Actually, it's probably after, because they're like, we don't want to deal with it. Purchased by new owners, the Canada Steamship Lines, and officially re-registered in Canada.
Newly discounted. Go get her yourself.
Yep. Even comes with an ice pick. Up until then, she was still under British registry. Our researcher found a list of accident reports for the lifespan of the Kamloops. On August 5th, 1924, she damaged her bow in a collision with the canal wall in Cornwall. There's got to be a joke there somewhere about a wall, but I don't have it. A few months later in November, there was an injury on board to someone named F. Beckstead.
Yeah, don't know any further details. Don't know who F. Beckstead was.
But they were injured. The following year, three different occurrences happened twice in May and once in July. There was some damage to the wires in Montreal, as well as the grain cargo, and then damage to the safe unloading in Toronto, respectively. I don't understand what that sentence is. What wires?
It had like, here, damage to M, L, H, and P wires. What is that? That's what I thought. I was thinking like some sort of like cable for like her
masts or something like that.
Yeah, or like support for the boilers, if that's a thing or whatever. I was assuming it was wires based on that. I don't think it's like, or it could be her telegraph wires, but I don't, within the ship, I don't know. Yeah,
there was damage to wires of some capacity while they were in Montreal, as well as
problems with her safe unloading, like with her unloading not being safe, I'm assuming.
Oh, okay.
MLH wires Ship, not shop. Ship.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It could refer to... That's a motorcycle.
It's okay. Damage occurred.
That is for us to know and not know and you to find out.
If you find out, underthewayspodcast@gmail.com, we'd love to know what the MLH wires on a old ship in the 1920s was.
And P wires.
And
P dot wires.
Can't forget those.
Yeah, you could be an honorary researcher for the day. Show her up. Yes, do it. I dare you.
Major shout out to you guys if you get it. On June 12, 1927, the Kamloops struck a bank on the starboard side. Probably didn't get any money out of it. Again, in the Cornwall Canal. That's at least consistent. Not even 2 weeks later, she again struck the Cornwall Canal. She needs to stay away.
She's just pinballing up and down this poor canal.
Her final accident before her ultimate sinking was on August 2nd, 1927. Her cargo of sugar was damaged by a faulty loading of the vessel. So something went wrong with loading the vessel up. That's unfortunate. The rest
ruined
of her existence was, I know, don't cry over spilled milk, but the sugar you can. The rest of her existence was spent busily working up and down the Great Lakes. All of that changed during the end of the season in 1927. Late November of 1927, to be exact, the Kamloops was dispatched for a trip up the lakes. She was carrying a mixed cargo of tar paper, paper-making machinery, coiled wire for farm fencing, piping, shoes, and food stuffs. On December 1st, the Kamloops stopped in Courtright, Ontario to add bagged salt to her cargo. Stopping at a port along the route is known as, quote, calling at a port, end quote, and also as a, quote, port of call, end quote. This terminology is used for a intermediate port stop during a voyage to load or unload cargo, take on supplies, or even allow passengers to embark or disembark. After successfully getting more salt, the Kamloops steamed upbound on Lake Huron before passing through the Sault Ste. Marie Canal on December 4th. All she had left to do was face the challenge of Lake Superior, which, as we all know by now, is no small task. Unfortunately for her and other ships making the Superior run at this time, a massive storm hit the lake on December 5th. The temperatures plunged to below freezing, while the winds picked up to over 30 miles an hour, which is 48.3 kilometers per hour, or 26.1 knots. What are we looking at? The dog?
I'm sorry.
Phil?
No, someone just got pulled over and they're using a searchlight and they pulled into like a parking lot and they're blocking the street. Cops walking over to the car. Ah, no one's running. Yeah, he's like blocking the whole street. They pulled off to the side. I don't know. It was just shiny lights and I got distracted. I'm sorry.
It happens.
Phil's sleeping. He's no longer judging me right now.
Snow began to fall, and the waves grew in intensity. The Kamloops was last seen headed towards the southeastern shore of Isle Royale, right outside of Thunder Bay, at dusk on December 6th. She was heavily coated with ice. The ship and the 22 men and women aboard were never seen alive again.
And here comes the sad stuff.
The blizzard raged for the next 2 days with frigid temps below 0 Fahrenheit, negative 18, negative 17, negative 16.
It's the final countdown. Doo-doo-doo-doo.
The blizzard raged the next 2 days with frigid temps below 0 degrees Fahrenheit, negative 17.8 degrees Celsius is below zero equivalent. Waves upwards of 26 feet, or 8 meters, and a dense fog hovering over the surface of Lake Superior. Multiple ships were reported as missing, and the search for the Kamloops began in earnest on December 12th. Rescuers focused on the Keweenaw Peninsula along with Isle Royale, but they had little hope of finding survivors due to the harsh winter conditions. This search continued until December 22nd. The following year, when the 1928 shipping season opened up in April, another search was held for the Kamloops. In May, fishermen discovered the remains of several crew members at 12 o'clock point on Isle Royale. It was originally reported that the remains were found on nearby Amygdaloid Island, but that ended up not being true, though the two locations are fairly close together. The remains were heavily decomposed and still wearing their life preservers with the word Kamloops stenciled on them. Along with the bodies, wreckage from the Kamloops was also discovered on shore, as well as fragments of a lifeboat and oars. In June of 1928, more bodies were found. A more thorough and comprehensive search for the wreck and the missing crew members was undertaken, but nothing more was found. Of the 22 crew members that were on the ship when she disappeared, only 9 were ever recovered. Of that 9, 5 were identified, and those remains were shipped to their next of kin. The 4 remaining unidentified were then buried at Thunder Bay with a collective memorial stone, finally being placed over their gravesite in 2011.
That's a long time to wait for that.
It's a while.
Well, I mean, they were buried right after, I'm sure. But like for the memorial stone to be put up.
I'm sure they were. Yeah, they were definitely.
90 some years later. Yeah. 80, I can't math.
That's wild.
Around 80 years later. It's crazy.
In December of 1928, a year after the Kamloops disappeared, a trapper named Louis Coutu was working at the mouth of the Agawa River in Algoma District, Ontario, on the eastern side of Lake Superior, about 150 miles or 241.4 kilometers east of Isle Royale. While here, he found a note in a bottle from Alice Bettridge. Alice was a young assistant stewardess who had initially survived the sinking of the Kamloops. Before she perished, she wrote, quote, STR, steamer, Kamloops, went down with all hands near the extreme west point of Isle Royale on December 6th, all hands but myself. Finder, please notify CANA office or Sioux Daily Star so my people will know my fate. Tell them it was just me who is not dead. Please do not disregard this note. Please, SOS, SOS, cold, cold, bitter, wondrous cold, very urgent, please notify Sioux Star or Canada Canal. It's negative 48 degrees Fahrenheit here now. Our bare wire cargo became loaded with ice and we capsized in 18 fathoms of water. Wreck, end quote.
There's a lot of it. It was like 2.5 pages found. They think it used to be closer to 3 pages, and the half a page is missing. A lot of that page is also kind of, you can see from the picture, ripped out. So they're kind of filling in, like, when it says, like, we capsize, it's like we C-A-I-Z-E-D. So, like, they filled in the P-S because capsized. Wreck, dot, dot, dot. Like, we don't know what that says. Part of it, like we said, is missing. We don't know what that said either, but yeah, it was just kind of like a final desperate plea of like, hopefully someone finds this and then finds me at that point. Her at that point was the only one still alive. And it's kind of a debate about whether she threw this off the ship before she left or she made it off the ship alive and then sent it. She was one of the ones alive on the island because she had an extra layer of clothing on her that she would have probably gotten from someone else. I don't know. It was very interesting. But yeah, it's not the full note. Also, considering her state and everything that was going on, props to her for even making some sort of coherent sense.
Yeah, super tragic, though. That's such a sad note to read.
Yeah, imagine finding it like a year too late.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Very sad. The letter was first brought to Alice's family by an official after its discovery by the trapper. Alice's mother, Emma, identified that the handwriting was indeed Alice's, and since then the letter had been passed down through the family before finally being donated to the Bruce County Museum by the Bettridge family in loving memory of Alice Bettridge in 2022. In a quick blurb about Alice, she was born in London, England in 1904 to parents Emma Schofield Steele and Henry Augustus, or Harry, Bettridge. Could you clarify?
Yeah, I never thought that Harry was a nickname for Henry, but he went by Harry. So, have a nickname with the same number of letters?
It might be. I don't know. I mean,
I guess it's better than calling him Hen. Riri's kind of cute, but a little ahead of his time.
Back in the day when we were living with our parents still, I think I was in high school or something like that. Yeah, I think it was high school. I would call in a pizza order every once in a while, and I just figured I'd use my dad's name, which is Harry.
Really?
Yeah. To like, oh, it's a pickup for Harry, whatever. That way it's just, you know, because I was just a nervous teenager, whatever. It's like, oh, it's for Harry.
It says Andrew.
They misunderstood me. Yeah, no, they misunderstood me, and they thought I said Terry. And so, I mean, maybe he was on the he was talking to someone, and they're like, oh, my name is Henry. Oh, Harry. I mean, that's a big stretch.
And it stuck. It's like when your boss calls you the wrong name, but then they never find out your name until like the day you leave, and you're like, by the way, it's this.
But then, yeah, my phone number was associated with that name, Terry. And so for like a couple years, whenever I would call him, like, what's your phone number? Give to, oh, is this Terry? Yep, this is Terry.
Funny. I had no clue.
I've never heard of Henry being, or Harry being a nickname for Henry. Anyway.
Yeah, it's not common, but I've seen it before. There's a lot of like weird of like shorter names, especially for like guys where it's like the nickname's the same number of letters, if not longer. I can't think of any right now. Or like someone's named Bob, so he goes by Rob, but it's not short for Robert or something. Just like stuff like that where it's like it's not really a nickname, it's just a name that you
prefer. I'd choose something similar.
Yes. Yeah.
Very strange. Anyway, she, along with her parents and her two older brothers, Henry and Alfred, or Alf, immigrated to Canada in 1907. They settled down in Southampton, Bruce County, Ontario, along the shores of Lake Huron. Alice eventually got three younger siblings, Harold, Madeline, and William, or Bill. She started working as an assistant ship steward or stewardess in 1926, assisting Southampton's first steward, Janet Nettie Grafton, on board the steamer Chicago Tribune, not the newspaper or magazine. The following spring, Alice again joined Nettie in 1927 for that year's shipping season. And in December of 1927, they were both serving aboard the package lake freighter, the Kamloops, during her last run of the season. Both women were planning on returning home to Southampton by Christmas. When the ship wrecked, Alice was one of the few who made it to the shore and died in a terrible and slow way, by death of exposure and more than likely hypothermia and starvation. Her body was found on June 4, 1928, on the shore of Isle Royale, along with several other crew members. She was interred at the cemetery in Southampton, Ontario.
Yeah, she was one of the few that was identified, luckily. I hypothesized the hypothermia and starvation. I don't even know if it would have taken long enough to have starvation, but yeah, it was definitely not. I don't know what would have been worse, so drowning with the ship or that. I would rather probably that than the drowning, but it would not, probably because I have such a fear of drowning. It was not a good way to go for anybody, either way, whether they made it off the ship or not.
Just a bad time.
Yeah.
Yeah. After the message in a bottle was found, nothing else popped up regarding the Kamloops for a very long time. For about 50 years, she was regarded as one of the, quote, ghost ships of the Great Lakes, and, quote, due to her sinking without much of a trace. But all that changed on August 21, 1977, when her wreck was finally discovered northwest of Isle Royale, near what is now called Kamloops Point. She was discovered by a group of sport divers, led by Ken Merriman, who were carrying out a systematic search for the vessel. The Kamloops was found more than 260 feet or 79 meters.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Here's below the surface of the water. She is lying on her starboard side at the base of an underwater cliff. Her smokestack is no longer attached, and she lies a short distance away from her starboard aft cargo mast. Some cargo remains in the hold, while other cargo is scattered throughout the wreck site.
Also, how terrifying is an underwater cliff? Like, I know that's what an island is, but...
It's pretty dramatic to see or think about. Like, you don't really think about it.
Yeah, and like seeing... Granted, it's an artist's rendition of it, because like, you're 200 some feet down, and what we got, 260 feet down. It's pretty dark there. Yeah. But like, to see the artist's rendition of like, it literally at the base of a cliff, and to think like, you have almost 300 feet of water above you. Ugh.
Yeah, that's pretty
nightmare fuel.
The wreck is considered a more challenging one due to the nature of it and the depth at which she is found. For this reason, not many people have visited the Kamloops final resting place, but in 2009, out of the 1,062 dives made to various wrecks around Isle Royale National Park, about 50 of those dives were to the Kamloops. To this day, the exact cause of her sinking remains a mystery, though if we want to believe Alice Bettridge's note, the ship capsized after having too much ice on it, which has happened to ships in the past. According to some experts, quote, the operation of the smaller package freighters in the late season always was fraught with hazards. Even the weight of the cargo up on the tween deck could jeopardize the stability of such a vessel when she began to ice up topside or was rolling in very high seas, and the addition of a heavy deck load was a recipe for disaster, end quote. It seems likely that the steamer collected so much ice on her deck load, as well as her superstructure, that she began to lose her stability and gradually heeled over to starboard as she tried to run from Blake Point, the northernmost tip of Isle Royale, to the entrance of Thunder Bay in the strong northwest winds. As she listed over, she would not respond properly to the helm inputs and eventually was driven ashore on Isle Royale, her starboard side to the shore. End quote. In one of the initial dives, once the Kamloops was found, the engine telegraph was set.
They had some sort of like telegraph communication between the engine room and the pilot house. I'm guessing that was pretty standard at that, but yeah, don't quote me on that part for sure.
I think like you see those like in the videos of old steamships or whatnot, like they like sort of rack the throttle thing looking thing up in the pilot house. Yeah, but that isn't attached to anything. I guess it's just a telegraph. I knew it wasn't attached to anything. I didn't know it was on the other side or like what it actually did, but I guess it's just a telegraph. Like you just rack it to whatever, and then based on whatever is inputted and what comes back from it, I mean, I guess the engine room's like, right, this is what we're doing. So,
because this made it sound like, granted, one of the sources I read, I was like, oh, just a lot of information. Then I realized they were just making up a story based on what they heard, so I didn't want to use all of what they said because it was fictionalized. What, it could be true, I don't know, I'm not knocking them, but because it wasn't like this is actually what happened, I didn't want to just quote them verbatim, but it was basically saying like that it was the engine room communicating basically what you just said but to the pilot house. So how they, I mean, you'll get into like explaining it here in a second, but it said like finished with engines, meaning like there's no power, and that's how they communicated that to the pilot house, is like they had it set on that or whatever. I don't know if it was like an actual like ring ring, this is a telegraph kind of thing, or just like you see what it's set up to. That would be an interesting deep dive. Literally, we should, I might look into that, of what the whole setup with communications was like, besides having someone run up and down all day.
I don't think when I was talking earlier I even got to the Ferris with engines, so I'll say that sentence and
no, maybe not. We kind of jumped the gun just explain ourselves without having a thing to explain.
In one of the initial dives, once the Kamloops was found, the engine telegraph was set to, quote, finished with engine's position, end quote. So, yeah, we talked a little bit about this. Feel free to throw in whatever you want. But I think, yeah, that's very interesting that they had that. It was not in any sort of, like, half speed ahead, full speed ahead, just finished, we're done, whatever. This indicated that the engines may not have been operational at the time of the sinking, or that the vessel was maybe set adrift before the disaster. Some other speculations have been that a guy wire attached to the port side of the Kamloops stack snapped free in the storm. The stack, no longer secure, toppled to the starboard side, shearing off the ventilators and crashing overboard, breaking through the starboard railing atop the stern cabin.
And I think that's a smokestack, sorry, not like a haystack.
Yes. Without the stack, the Without the stack, the coal-fired engine could not function, and the crew was forced to, quote, finish, end quote, the engines. If there had been some kind of power, it would have been put on standby, not finished with engines. The Kamloops had no power before she sank, and with no power, she was at the mercy of the raging storm. She might have hit the island broadside, smashing her starboard bow, temporarily fixed on a reef. She would have quickly taken on water before rapidly sinking, bow first, the rest of the way at the foot of the reef. The crew most likely thought themselves safer to stay on board than face the icy seas and sub-zero temperatures. They probably hoped that the Kamloops would remain on the reef for longer, leaving potential for rescue. However, the opened cabin door may indicate a hasty departure of some crew members as they realized their doom. The other crew remained trapped in the stern house yet to be opened.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. They're like, because there are no, aside from Alice's short letter, there's like no firsthand accounts, obviously, of what happened, and no one to like really be like, oh, this is a recording, this is a black box, whatever, like it's in planes. They're just having to put together a puzzle backwards, which I know is the whole point of archaeology, but it also sounds so cool and yet like really sad when you see these things, because the people who, I mean, the you're either staying on a ship that you know is for the moment safe, on a reef, or you're like surviving the cold waves, being crashed into rocks, sub-zero temperatures, snow, potential drowning, like all these things, and the storm's like ongoing. It's not like it just stopped. Or, yeah, like I said, staying on a ship, and then the ship lurches and moves and then slips off the reef and like goes bow first. You have like a split second to try to get out, which maybe those people who made it on the island, that's what happened to them. And you can see that by the door being opened. And then you find another door that's not opened, and you're like, oh, this is probably people who couldn't make it out, and that's the person that we find on there today, kind of thing. And it's really sad. It's cool to piece together a puzzle, but it's really sad to like find that story and try to like relive their last moments, I guess.
Yeah, it is a mystery. We don't know exactly like what went down, what happened, and all that, but based on...
The ship went down. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm ashamed of myself.
But yeah, just how it happened, what occurred. This is just sort of experts' best guess based on evidence and things that they found.
The best educated guess.
Yeah. And as we mentioned before, there are still human remains on board the Kamloops. Usually when a ship contains bodies, a shipwreck, they're considered graveyards in and of themselves and can be off limits. The Edmund Fitzgerald is one such ship. However, the Kamloops is very much so open to divers despite still having a crew member forever on duty. Old Whitey, as he's known, is a unidentified crew member. Some say is lodged under a stairway in the engine room. Others say he floats around. It is seen as disrespectful to photograph the deceased, but someone has managed to snap a photo of him, and you can find the photo for yourself rather easily. Old Whitey has been dubbed this nickname due to having undergone the process of saponification. Also, before we jump into that, Old Whitey has not been officially identified, but it's most likely that he is Arthur Hammond, the engineer. If you get a bit squeamish around death and body processes post-mortem, you might want to skip out for the next several minutes or catch you on the next episode. And for the rest of us, saponification is at its very core a process in which fats and oils are converted into a wax-like consistency, such as soap, through a reaction with alkaline or basic substances. The term comes from the Latin word sapo, which means soap.
Just scramble the letters around. Yeah. What's that called when you like mix the letters around to create a completely different word? You know what I'm talking about? Anagrams, I think.
Sure.
I think it's an anagram. Carry on.
All right. Well, dead bodies can also go through a similar process, which produces adipocere, also known as either corpse wax, grave wax, or the, quote, fat of graveyards, end quote. That's quite the descriptor. This Classic. Is a product of decomposition that turns body fat, which everybody has, into a soap-like substance through the process of saponification. What was this word again?
Adipocere.
Okay. Adipocere occurs when the body fat is exposed to anaerobic bacteria in a warm, damp, alkaline environment, such as soil or water. Grave wax is soft and greasy gray in appearance when it starts to form. As time moves on and it ages, the wax hardens and turns brittle. However, the saponification will actually stop the decay process in its tracks by encasing the body in the waxy material, essentially turning it into a soap mummy.
You're never going to look at your soap the same way again. I'm so glad I'm already showered and I already had dinner. Yeah,
liquid soap for the rest of my life. The adipocere is really cool, some would say, because it can preserve bodies from hundreds of years ago. Two of the more famous, quote, soap mummies, end quote, are from the early 1800s and are called the Soap Man and the Soap Lady, original. She's on display at the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia and is from sometime in the 1830s. The Soap Man is kept in a controlled environment at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History. He most likely died sometime between 1800 and 1810. One of the weirdest cases of corpse wax, aside from Old Whitey, was a headless body found floating in a bay of Brienzy Sea?
I think it's Brienzy.
Brienzy Sea, S-E-E, in Switzerland in 1996. He was nicknamed Brienzy, also very original, and people had no clue where he came from. In 2011, it was discovered by researchers from the University of Zurich that this man was someone who had drowned in the lake in the 1700s. My word. After he drowned, his body floated down to the lake bed where it was covered by sediment and formed the adipocere wax before floating back up several hundred years later, just for fun.
For them to be like, oh, where did he come from? I don't know if they're looking at like missing persons within the last, I don't know what span, but from like 300 years prior?
So what?
Not really. 200 some? Unhinged. Almost 300?
Unnecessary.
Say, some would say.
Yes. Apparently, while great at preserving bodies, grave wax is a nightmare for cemeteries. Some countries refuse grave sites every 15
years.
Reuse, thank you.
No, you can't be buried here.
Yeah. Some countries reuse gravesites every 15 to 25 years when the bodies are expected to be completely skeletonized. However, as some German graveyards in 2008 found out, the presence of this waxy substance was so bad that bodies weren't decomposing at all. Some cemeteries were able to solve this macabre problem with building burial chambers and using expensive soil reconditioning.
What a horrific thing to find out.
Yeah, like, oh, John's still there, looking like John. Should be some bones, but...
Yeah, a little soapy there, John.
Yeah. Well, back to the Kamloops wreck. She is located at the northeast end of Todd Harbor off Kamloops Point of Isle Royale, within 100 yards or 91.4 meters to shore. Wow, 300 feet out. Within 300 feet and 260 feet down, that's a drop-off.
Staggering.
She's lying in roughly an east-west direction. There are usually two submerged flotation devices on the wreck that are around 15 feet or 4.6 meters under the...
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Waves and can be seen from the surface if you're directly over them. Granted, the National Park Service does not maintain the floats and lines, so their conditions tend to vary year to year. But typically, the closest float to shore is attached to the rail at the forward top corner of the stern cabins, which are at a depth of around 190 feet or 57.9 meters down. The float that is the furthest away from shore is attached to the top of the bow cabins at a depth of 240 feet or 75.2 meters down. And again, this wreck is considered technical and difficult, so please go at your own safety level.
Also, for the ship itself to have, like, what, that's a 50-foot discrepancy between bow and stern?
Yeah, it's sitting,
it's going deep and it's still going down.
Yeah. Apparently, the bow and stern are to be considered as separate dives due to the time needed to see it all. While the top of the stern deck rests at 180 feet, there's not much you can see until you're about 200 feet down, or about 61 meters. And according to SuperiorTrips.com, it's best to use the bow line for the bow dives and the stern line for the stern dives, which is good to know.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Be forewarned that the lake bed under the wreck is strewn with broken bales of pipe that can make for some rather interesting patterns to divers experiencing narcosis from the depth. So if you're not a diver, like we aren't, narcosis or nitrogen narcosis is an anesthetic effect caused by breathing compressed gas at deep depths, usually caused by nitrogen. It's a condition that affects scuba divers and in some rare cases, free divers in clouds, judgment, and reasoning. If you've been narked, as some say, you're, quote, simply floating along with no decisions to make or tasks to complete. You may not realize you're mentally impaired, end quote. That's like how I go through every day.
I was going to say, sounds delightful until you realize you're 300 feet underwater.
Yeah, that would be a problem. This can cause impaired judgment, difficulty concentrating, drowsiness, overconfidence, and euphoria, and or feeling afraid. That's all just a bunch of scary things
this
to happen
is a Monday,
once.
Oh.
Or that. A few important things to note about this. Narcosis is not the same thing as the bends, though both can have quite their own set of repercussions, issues, and such. And nitrogen narcosis can start showing up in as little as 98 feet or 30 meters underwater, with most feeling it after they reach the recreational limit of 130 feet or 40 meters. And remember, you can't really see much of anything on the Kamloops before you get to 200 feet down. Or 61 meters, it's cold water, there's fatigue, anxiety, and alcohol intoxication can increase the likelihood of getting narked. So, say you make it down to the Kamloops and you still have your druthers about you, the angle of the wreck resting on its starboard side can also mess with your orientation, but if all is well, the stern is more intact and has more rooms for you to visit. You can swim around the stern cabins, the crew quarters, mess, multi-purpose dining hall area, the galley, or the kitchen, the engine room, the officer's mess. You can also look into these rooms through windows and skylights without actually going into the wreck itself. Unfortunately, the running lights as well as a couple of engine gauges were stolen by wreck thieves in the late 1970s. Remember to take only memories and leave only bubbles if you dive to locations like this. And despite this, there's still a lot of other cool things to see, including the ship's emergency helm, or the wheel, along with a ship's telegraph on the stern. The wheel was actually chained in place after the Kamloops was discovered to ensure that it remains in place for everyone who goes down to sea.
Yeah, because I guess the whole, don't take anything from wrecks wasn't in place when they found the ship in the 70s.
Interesting. The bottom of the bow is about 265 feet down and considered a heavy tech dive, or heavily technical. The bow is also buried in the mud up to around the center line of the ship and past the anchor pockets. Due to this, it appears that the Kamloops most likely sank bow first and dove straight into the lake bed. So the cargo holds of the bow are still full of the varied freight, and you can see wire fencing, the 1928 high-top shoes, wow, pipes, candy, lifesaver, paper wrappers, and crates of honeybee molasses. You can also see the loading booms and winches, as well as the king posts, which are vertical poles used to support cargo handling booms, winches, and other equipment.
Yeah, the pictures of the lifesavers and the shoes, I think, creep me out the most besides Old Whitey, just because, like, it looks like it could have sank maybe 20 years ago, aside from the shoes being a totally different style than what we wear today. But also something with, like, shoes, I think it's probably because of the Titanic shoes of, like, that's just where the body decompose is where those shoes are now, and I keep thinking of that when there's like a pile of shoes, but no, it's like it was a cargo of shoes. I mean, yeah, people died on this, but it was a cargo of shoes that's in the pictures. It's not like they were full of people. But the lifesavers is wild too. They really haven't changed their packaging much.
I mean, why fix something that's not broken?
And props for surviving this long.
Yeah,
no, I wonder if there's any of the mints in there. Probably not. They're probably all dissolved.
I wouldn't want to try. When the ship sank, the pilot house was torn off and the deck machinery was buried. Allegedly, there is a photograph floating around somewhere of some men fishing out of the pilot house roof out of the shallow water off of Green Isle, which is most likely referring to a former fishing location on the north side of Lake Superior around the Todd Harbor area.
They fished out the pilot house, not out of. Oh. You're good. You don't have to re-say it. I'm just stating it. They were very tall men back then, fishing out of the pilot house roof.
Yes. Other than potentially that being somewhere, not much of the pilot house can be found today. The door to the captain's quarters is open, but with all of the technical diving gear you have to wear, it's too narrow to enter. It's recommended that if you only have time for one dive, the stern is the place to go because of what there is to see, as well as allowable bottom time and the difficulty of the dive. Remember, if you do dive down, and even if not, the Kamloops, like countless other shipwrecks on the Great Lakes, is a site of terrible maritime tragedy. Plus, there are still human remains on the wreck. With all of that said, dive with respect and please avoid disturbing them in any way. If diving really isn't your thing and you're wanting to appreciate the hard work put in by others before you, check out some of the sources we'll list on our socials. Becky Kagan Schott on Facebook is quite the talented diving photographer. We'll include a few of her pics, with more being able to be found on liquidproductions.com. There are also various YouTube videos of divers exploring the wreck and taking you along with them. No risk of getting narked that way. And that is finally the story of the SS Kamloops and of Old Whitey. And as far as pictures of Old Whitey, as we mentioned, there is one. It's easy to find, just out of respect. We're not going to post it or whatnot. But if it's something that interests you, it's really not a very intelligible photo. Like, it's so don't it's definitely blurry. Yeah, don't expect, like, there he is. You kind of have to be like, I think this is that might. So anyway,
to me it kind of looks like legs, and if you zoom in you can see skeletonized feet, but you really have to concentrate on it to see that. It's not like it's like a jump scare. I would personally jump scare at any wreck, let alone a wreck with a crew member still on board. But yeah, we won't, like Andrew said, we won't post that. Plus there's a lot of other photos of the shipwreck we do want to post. That's really cool, like the lifesavers and this, the lifeboat, the shoes, the wheel, like everything else. Like, there's a lot of really cool photos out there, and you can, this is a well documented photograph wise ship. So you can easily look up Old Whitey SS Kamloops and you got a picture of him. So definitely proceed at your own risk to that. it's unsettling to me, but also anything underwater is unsettling, so it's great. But yeah, there's a lot of like wild photos from this.
Mm-hmm. It's quite impressive.
So,
but that's the Kamloops.
Thank you. last week's trivia, we skipped it. This week's trivia, we know that technically Halloween is over, but now is the time to stock up on that discounted sugary goodness. With that in mind, what is the top most popular Halloween candy, grossing at about $509.85 million in sales in October 2024? Hint, it was first introduced in 1928. So what is the most popular Halloween candy, as of last year at least, and looking like it's going to top this year as well? But the numbers aren't in yet, so float on by next week for more Great Lake adventures. I wonder if we'll find the Thanksgiving wreck this year, or if we'll just stick to Canada's side of the lakes, where it's not celebrated. So tune in to find out, and happy belated Halloween, I guess. Early Thanksgiving? Holiday season? November? No shave November? I don't know. No spend November? Whatever you're doing. Happy that. You can send in your own stories or suggestions to our email at underthewavespodcast@gmail.com. See the pictures that go along with the episodes on our socials, which is Facebook, Under the Waves Podcast, and Instagram at Under the Waves Podcast. And then check out our website for gift ideas. It's never too early to start thinking about Christmas for yourself or for others. And source links if interested, and that's www.underthewavespodcast.com. Leave a 5-star review with your favorite holiday listed in it. And Andrew, what is your favorite holiday?
I gotta say probably Thanksgiving or Christmas, and not for like, okay, you know, gift things or what have you. It's, I don't know, I just like the idea of like hanging out with friends and family and just like, just, you know, going on an adventure, sharing a meal. Like, you don't even have to have like a big event. I think for me, Thanksgiving,
the coziness, the cozy maybe, vibes,
maybe Christmas. Yeah, just with good people, good friends, some good food, go out, do something. Oh. Heck, if you're doing it like in the woods, like camping, even better. Cold camping with some friends, quality time.
I like it.
What about you?
That's fun. I like New Year's. I used to like Christmas a lot, and then working FedEx kind of ruined it with the whole consumerism. But I think you still have the winter. It's like cool fireworks, even though it can be problematic. But like, it's like a global thing. Like, you feel connected like, to everybody, just like everyone's celebrating it versus like some celebrate this holiday and some celebrate that holiday and whatever. And it's not really a lot of like emotional things tied to it besides like a new start. So I don't know. I kind of like New Year's. It seems like a fun, lighthearted, you don't have to like worry about spending money on gifts. You don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, I didn't see this person for this holiday or whatever. And to me, it just seems like a carefree do-over, restart, refresh everything. I know you can restart any time of the year, but it's just like, it's just a nice like mental reset.
Indeed. So, indeed. Yeah. Well, share this episode with someone who dressed up for Halloween as the job they could never actually have. You know, before life, bills, and reality got involved. Send this episode to a friend who proudly wore a firefighter helmet at age 6, but now sets off the smoke alarm just by making some toast. Or text it to the person who went dressed up as a doctor or a nurse but still faints at the sight of a paper cut. Not even any blood. Tag your childhood astronaut who's still trying to launch their side hustle into orbit, and don't forget the marine biologist who ended up living in an apartment with a goldfish. And a dream. Maybe that zookeeper friend became a cat parent instead. Once, twice, is 5 cats too many? Or pass this along to the one who wanted to be a teacher but has little to no patience when the group chat goes on and on about some random nonsense. What about that friend who wanted to be a pop star, but is really just headlining the shower concert series of the year? Perhaps they wanted to be a princess or a superhero, and who knows, maybe they secretly are living their dreams. You should follow up with them at some point when they're mysteriously MIA for a while in a bit of time. Or perhaps they wanted to be a specific animal, and well, we all know that animals don't have phones, and perhaps just retell the story to them over a local watering trough. Whatever the dream career or costume was, we salute this tiny version of you who believed anything was possible. Share this episode with the person who reminds you that it still might just be. We love you and we're proud of you. We release new episodes every Friday. And until then, folks, fair winds and following seas.
We'll catch you next time under the waves. Bye.
Cheers.
I psyched you out with a nice ending.
That was surprising. I wasn't prepared for that one either.
What a turn.
That was way too sweet to be written by you.
Ouch.